Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart, who I'm watching right now. Violeta Afanasieva has a video right now on her Twitter feed of her and Stewie. What are you doing? Day six on the ice.
We're working on our backflips today, so we're progressing really well. So I hope Brian Bickle and Christopher Stieg are listening, because we're in it to win it, and we're actually ahead of the competition.
You look like you're having too much fun in this thing, too, but I watched some of the videos from the weekend. You're dancing, getting your moves on. I don't know, Stewie.
Yeah, the funny thing about that video, I didn't even know they were filming, because Violeta actually set her camera up. I didn't know it was recording, and they're like, oh, just do loose hips. I didn't know I was going to turn into a TikTok video.
Looking sure. Good, bud.
Sure you didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. Stewie knows. Stewie's not new at this anymore, right, Berkey? Like, he knows that by this time,
it's social media king.
I know, right?
Social media king.
Here's the deal with Stewie now, Berkey. Every time a light goes off, Stewie shows up. Like, I swear, I opened my fridge this morning to get out some milk, and Stewie jumped out. It's incredible. Corey Perry and Joe Pavelski are going to dominate some of the conversation today. And it's great that we have you on today specifically, Berkey, because of all the people on this program, no one can speak about Corey Perry with more authority than you. Your thoughts on Corey Perry, the double OT hero, two goals in that game, and he is dominating the headlines as we head now to a game six. Dallas wins game five by a final score of 3-2. Give us your nickel and dime thoughts on Corey Perry.
Well, I think if you look at one thing about my past is because I moved from team to team, I drafted or signed a lot of guys and had them briefly. So I drafted Ryan Kessler, I drafted Kevin Bieksa, I drafted the Twins, but didn't really have long careers with them. Same with Corey Perry. I did not draft him. I will never take credit for him. I wish I could. The late, great Brian Murray drafted him, but the thing about Corey Perry that has not changed in 15 years or whatever it is that he will pay any price to score a goal. He will carry it, he'll toe drag it into the crease, knowing he's going to get cross-checked in the neck by the defenseman, knowing the defenseman or center coming down low is going to crunch him into the goalpost. He doesn't care. As long as he gets that shot off, he'll pay any price. And when he doesn't have the puck, he is the most annoying guy. He's Brad Marchand on steroids.
He's that annoying. You've always talked about your love of grumpy hockey players. Does Corey Perry fit that mix?
Yeah, he's grumpy. He's actually grumpy in the morning. Like when he comes to practice, there he kind of drags in there, shuffles in, and he's kind of really a grumpy guy. But a lot of great hockey players are Pronger, Kessler. But he's not a grumpy guy after practice. He's actually a really good kid. Well, he's not a kid anymore. He's got kids of his own. But to me, he'll always be that blonde-haired kid. I told this story before about Scott Niedermeyer, and it's in the book. Joffrey Lupo and Corey Perry were late for a bus in Boston, and they were out the night before a game. And I stayed at my house in Boston. I didn't stay with the team at the Ritz Hotel. I drove in the morning and talked to Randy, and he said, two guys are late, Lupo and Perry. And so listeners understand, they were on time for the bus. It was 9 o'clock bus. They ran out at 9:01. But in hockey, that's late. You got to be on the bus 10, 15 minutes before. So they were late. I was going to send them down to Portland. And our farm team was in Portland, Maine. We actually had the team busing down to watch the game. And I was going to put Lupel and Perry on the bus going back. But Scott Niedermeyer grabbed me in the lobby and said, let me handle this. And I said, Scott, I think these two might be screw-ups. If they screw up again, you're missing a game. You're sitting out a game. He said, yep, I got it. So that's how close Corey Perry came. Now, later, he had been in the American League earlier that year. I didn't like the way our room was, so we sent him and Getzlaff down. But he was a joy, a great practice player, worked hard, stayed out after and worked on tips and roofing the puck from in close, all the stuff he excels at. That goal he scored the other night, I've watched him work on that every day after practice.
Really, eh? Yep. And he is, as we refer to it, he is from the Anthony Stewart draft of 2003. Please be joined now by Chris Johnson of the NHL on Sports and Hockey Night and headlines as well. CJ, we're just extolling the virtues. It seems like it's Corey Perry Day. It's been Corey Perry weekend, really, around the NHL, as he was the starter of the show on Saturday night. When I say that name, what comes to your mind right now, CJ?
Pain in the butt. And I would use a stronger word, but I don't know where we're at in terms of what we're allowed for language. But
who knows?
You know, he's...
Take a chance, CJ.
Come on. You can do anything once. Yeah. That's what Berkey always tells me.
And, you know, what I think about, too, it's one of those guys that everyone hates until he's on your team. And so, you know, when it gets to playoff hockey and, this series has been, for today's modern era, has been relatively in your face. There's been some physical play. And, you know, Corey's obviously been in the middle of that, sticking Braden Point at the end of the game on Friday night. That's him to me, still out there giving it his all and scores those greasy goals.
Stewie, go ahead. Sorry, we're leaving you out of this one.
Yeah, CJ. So, you know, with the success of Corey Perry and Joe Pavelski, do you see now NHL teams now, you know, knowing that they need guys like this, and could you see an influx of guys signing, veteran guys for next season?
I think on some level there's going to be a recognition that, you know, even just Tampa, obviously those guys play for Dallas, but Tampa went out and got a little bit more sandpaper after, you know, their playoff loss last year. And I do think that this kind of helps reinforce the idea that there's value to having, a mix to your teams that skill alone usually doesn't get it done when the playoffs come around. And so, you know, I don't think experience is ever a bad thing. It's about, you know, making that work contract wise and finding the right guys to do that for you. But, certainly those are two guys the Stars went out and signed last year in free agency. And you know, all of a sudden they've scored the last six goals in this series. And I think it probably played just as big a role off the ice with the way they've been around the team.
Berkey, go ahead.
Hey, CJ. Let me just finish one comment. They asked me about Pavelski and Corey Perry. I didn't get to mention just 10 seconds on Joe Pavelski. I've had him several times, Olympics, World Cup. And first off, great kid. Sneaky tough, too. He's got a mean streak in him. But he's really a Swiss Army knife. He can do everything you want a hockey player to do. He can kill penalties, run a power play, and a great in-close player. So I didn't want to just praise one player, not the other. So, CJ, what's your thought on any roster, any lineup changes?
It doesn't look like it. We could only see the Stars morning skate today because we're just seeing the team that's the home team that night, and they didn't have any of the guys that have been injured, you know, Fox, Como, on the ice today. So I would assume that they're not playing tonight. You know, John Cooper did. He hasn't spoken yet to the media today, but he did hint that maybe he might look at, you know, swapping out a player in his lineup. And you know, we've seen them go 11-7 at times in the playoffs. Maybe they go back to that or you know, might switch out Carter Verhaeghe, but not sure. But it does look like that it won't be – there's nothing major brewing here in terms of, roster change.
And keep in mind for people, CJ, that are not following as closely as we do, when you say no changes for Dallas, that injured list is pretty long.
Yeah, it is, and it's a lot of their bottom six guys that I think have a lot of, you know, value to the team and kill penalties. And, you know, I know that they're not the big names. Obviously, Ben and Sagan are playing for them. But, you know, the loss, I think, especially in games this tight where, you know, killing those penalties off and being able to have good, strong third line grinding minutes, you know, is significant for them. And, you know, they've also played basically the whole playoffs without Ben Bishop, who, you know, was their number one goaltender. So Anton Hudobin's, you know, merge is quite a good story for them. And, you know, it's almost, it might be overstating it to say it's a miracle, but this run has been something special for Dallas. And you know, it shouldn't go unnoticed that they found a way on fumes to grind out a win in double overtime on Saturday. You know, the first overtime period just looked like they didn't have it. They barely had any shots or shot attempts at the net. They were hanging on, and it was those veteran players that found a way to extend the series out, and we'll see if they can do it again here today.
I like the way you put that, CJ. Doing it on fumes. I remember talking to someone with Dallas, the organization, before this series, and he said, "Look, we're a banged up group. Like, we all know about, you know, the guy, obviously the one, Rupe Hintz is out, and Dowling draws in, but Bishop and Johns and Faxa and Blake Colm, like the obvious ones are the ones that we know." You know, I can't help but, you know, watching these games and saying to myself, you know, man, Tyler Seguin doesn't look like Tyler Seguin. And other players at times, you say to yourself, man, these guys are kind of, these guys are kind of doing it all, you know, put together by, you know, wrapped up by hockey tape and bubble gum right now. Like, does this not look to you like a really injured squad? I know one of the wonderful things that we all look forward to in some weird sense at the end of any playoff round is the big reveal of who's hurt and who wouldn't be playing if it were the regular season. But I can't help looking at Dallas and saying, man, this team is gutting it out big time.
For sure. You know, I really felt it too in game five. I mean, the season's on the line. It's a Stanley Cup final. You got a lot of veteran players there that understand that this, they might not get another chance like this. I mean, this is it. And so, you know, the fact they found a way to win that game, you know, they found a way to tie that game even after going down in the third period. I mean, everyone's minds, I mean, I'm probably not the Stars players are probably forcing this idea out though, is that we're going to see the cup, you know, Sergachev scores early in the third. Yeah. And you know, Tampa gets it into the last 10 minutes of regulation with a 2-1 lead, you know, and somehow Dallas keeps finding a way. And look, they were nearly went down to Calgary 3-1 in that series. It was a Joe Pavelski goal late that tied it, and they won that game in overtime. You know, in game seven against Colorado, they went down with 3 minutes left in game seven, and then Kiviranta tied it and won it in overtime. I mean, they've continually, you know, been able to get to the well and just, you know, find ways to eke out games. And you know, I think as a result of that, even though they are banged up, I'm sure the Lightning are too. I mean, we know Braden Point missed two games in the last round. He's looked good in this series, but I'm sure he's probably not at 100%. They're without Steven Stamkos still. And you know, I bet that there's bumps and bruises and even worse than that on both sides of the ice here. But, you know, Dallas clearly is not going to go away easily. We know that much. And kind of has me thinking we're going to see a game seven. I don't know why. That's just in my mind. It feels like 2020 is this year that won't end. This is a hockey season that won't end. You know, maybe the Stars do find a way to take this right to the limit.
Would make for a crazy Wednesday with all the basketball and all the baseball and throwing an NHL game seven. Bring it on. Stewie, go ahead.
Anton Hudobin's game four was best described by Jim Houston as adventurous, but he responded in game five with a 39 save performance. How would you assess his game, and what Hudobin can we expect tonight?
Well, I'm amazed. He was one of the players that just took the morning skate. I figured after those back-to-back nights and all the shots he faced and the fact that both games had overtime periods in them, you know, you'd see him resting today. But, you know, he's an animal. He was out there this morning taking shots and morning skate. And you know, I think we'll see his best. He's been really good in the playoffs. He's not probably as technically or fundamentally sound as a lot of goaltenders we see in the league. But, you know, he's a battler. And you know, I do think there's value to how his team feels about him. I think he's very popular in their dressing room. You know, the guys really want to rally around him. And Dallas, when they're at their best, you know, they're choking off the middle area of the ice and not giving up too many high danger looks. And so, you know, I would think that they'll be focused on doing that to make his job a little easier. And he'll be there to bail them out as he has been, you know, throughout these last couple of months, you know, when they do give up some chances.
Berkey.
Hey, CJ, so the signings, you know, Robert Hague signs. You see the last few signings, it appears as if everyone's going to stick with the current market values. But the Petrie deal to me is kind of a look at maybe what's coming. A little less term, a little less money for guys to stay where they want to stay. What do you see is going to happen with this wave? And Stewie hates this, I know. What do you see what's going to happen with this next wave of free agency?
Well, I think guys are going to take security wherever they can find it. You know, if this was a normal time, Jeff Petrie wouldn't have been eligible to sign during the cup final because he still has a year left on his deal. You know, it's something the league's allowing given the unusual circumstances. But typically someone in his shoes who's coming off another strong year would probably wait it out and see where things went before signing that deal. But look, he acknowledged, you know, when the Canadians came to him 2 weeks ago and said, we want to do an extension, that he was open to it just given the uncertainty of the times. And you know, he did well on the contract. He got some bonus money in the contract. And, you know, he was comfortable signing that deal, even if it looks below market or even slightly below market, because, you know, I think there's value to having a deal. And unfortunately, I think this is going to be a really unusual free agent period for guys that are coming free October 9th. You know, the big boys, I'm sure, will get their money and will do well. But, you know, a lot of players are going to get squeezed. And, you know, I'm talking to some agents and people around, you know, they seem to think that this might be a slower free agency. That is, you know, some guys, you know, pretty much all the action on July 1st or 2nd, you know, for the not just the top tier free agents, but even the middle tier. And I think that middle tier guys might have to wait some time, almost a little bit of a chess match between the teams, know, who have to make other moves, maybe to clear roster space to sign them. And so I think this is going to be a very different kind of free agency than what we're used to. And I also think those guys like Petrie that are a year out, if teams want to sign them, I think they're going to be more willing to do it.
Okay, then let me ask you another tea leaves question then. What do you think we'll see more of as we approach the ninth? Teams trading the rights to players or more sign and trades?
I think we'll see more rights traded. You know, there haven't really been, I don't know if there's been a true sign and trade in the NHL, you know what I mean? Since this, when it went to where you could sign your own player for 8 years, but you can only sign 7 years as a free agent somewhere else in that 12-13 CBA, you know, there's been some discussion around it. I think, you know, the Leafs and you know, considered doing it with John Tavares when they ended up signing him in free agency. But, you know, it's just such a tough needle to thread. And, you know, I don't know that there's that much value for the team doing it. Obviously, there's value for the player in getting an eighth year by going that route. And, you know, his team that he's leaving knows that at least they can get some kind of asset back for him. But, you know, for the team that's signing, to me, the only reason you're doing that is if you're getting a bargain on the AAV. That's the only sort of impetus. Why would you give up, you know, some kind of piece to facilitate that when you could just sign the guy as a free agent? So I do think you'll see some rights traded. Obviously, there's been talk about Torrey Krug's rights. You know, maybe we see Pietrangelo's rights traded or Taylor Hall. You know, I do think that you'll probably get a couple more of those. And we already had Joel Edmondson's rights traded from Carolina before he signed to Montreal. So that to me seems to be what we're probably going to see more of.
Stewie.
You just mentioned Pietrangelo. Where do you think he ended up? And I'm just surprised and shocked, like, how much this is not a big storyline. Everyone's been waiting for a right-handed defenseman for the last how many years to hit the market, and I think he's one of the biggest in the last couple of years, and it's not really a main story. So where do you see him ending up? And Berkey and I have a bet, over or under $9.5 million for his AAV.
Oh, wow. Who's got the over right now?
Stewie.
I do.
He wants everybody to hit, ring the bell. Everybody for Stewie.
As much as it pains me to side with Berkey, I got to think he's taking the under there, just because of the market.
We'll see.
I'm not certainly hating on his game. I just think it's not an ideal time to be in his shoes. And you know, I do think this is a main storyline. It's going to take on even more life, I think, once we get on the other side of the Stanley Cup final, and you know, we see if there's a chance for him to stay in St. Louis. I believe that, looking at the situation, that's what makes the most sense. But you know, obviously the Blues have to manage their cap, and this is his last big chance to cash in. This will be his last, you know, significant contract, I would think, in the NHL. I assume he's going to sign long term, and he's going to get a lot of money, even if it doesn't get all the way to $9.5 million per season. So, you know, I have to believe that there's at least some hope he'll remain a Blue. But with each passing day that doesn't happen, you know, we're getting closer to him hitting the market, and you know, seeing how the rest of the teams value him.
Yeah, and Jeff, let me jump in here. Well, Stewie, so everyone should know, Stewie's doing Battle of the Blades, and he has been he has been dropping weight. He looks so good. He's already dropped 25 pounds. We have a bet on another number, and we're not going to divulge what that number is. If he hits that number, I got to buy him a steak dinner at Barbarians, which is my favorite steak place because they do all my charity work. But I'm going to make back more than that on this bet on Pietrangelo.
We'll see, Berkey.
I like your spot you're in there, Berkey. Unless he's taking like a 3-year deal somewhere, you know, maybe he gets that kind of thing. But he's going to opt for security, I would think, in this situation too.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Berkey.
And I on that same theme, and it drives Stewie nuts, the one group that I always like to get paid are the UFAs. Like a guy like Alex Pietrangelo that played he probably had insurance, but basically ran the risk of playing out the last year of his deal. And Torrey Krug, guys, I want them to get paid. I just know what's happened on the business side, the revenue side of our business. It's been decimated. And I think it's going to be really hard for everyone. And that's why you watch. I think Jeff Petrie's going to turn out to have been a very smart young man. But anyway, CJ, so this whole what are we doing about next year? Now, I know Gary Bettman got very exasperated when Stewie asked him about it the other day when we had him on, even though I told Stewie not to. And I know he was exasperated at his playoff press conference. And I know the answer is we don't know. So I'm not asking you to read a crystal ball when there is not one. But what's your sense on what we're looking at? For example, I think we're looking at fewer than 82 games. I think we're looking at a Canadian division. What else might be there?
Well, and I think we're looking at further realignment than just a Canadian division for that season. I mean, if you have the Canadian division, it's going to require everything else to be done regionally as well. You know, I'm with you on the 82 games. I mean, basically, you work backwards. The league's been pretty clear it doesn't want to go head-to-head with the Tokyo Olympics in any way. And Gary Bettman mentioned in his press conference, you know, before the Stanley Cup final that he doesn't like the summer too much, you know, to infringe on where they play. So if we're starting in January, and that's probably still a little bit ambitious, and it has to end by mid-July or a little bit just a couple days later than that, you know, it's going to be tough to get in 82 games. And you know, I do sense that the league really wants to be, you know, take its time. And that's probably where the exasperation comes in, because obviously we're all speculating on this stuff and talking about it, but, you know, the league isn't all that much closer to knowing 100% itself, you know, what's going to happen. And, you know, I'll be the first to put my hand up and say that they were pretty smart with how they handled the whole Hub City discussion, which was the previous thing that was exasperating them, I think, with how much it was discussed about all the various places they might conduct this playoff tournament. But, you know, they clearly made two good choices, two solid choices with you know, no positive tests. Right here with either one or two games left in the season now. So, you know, I think that it's going to start mid-January at the earliest is kind of the feel I have. It's probably going to be less than 82. And, you know, maybe if they have a shorter season, one thing I've heard, you know, bantied around, Berkey, is maybe then you do that expanded playoff format just for that 1 year again, because you're not having a full year. It might be a way to you know, add some additional revenue. You know, obviously you're hoping, you know, we might be starting with very few fans in very few places, but you're hoping, you know, by the end of the 2020-21 season that you can have more fans in the building. And so, you know, that might be another thing that the wrinkle that they put in there to, you know, make it more fair competitively, but also give them some new avenues to make some money.
Shifting gears again, as we sort of bounce all over the place with you, let me ask you about Steve Yzerman. How well do you know the Detroit general manager?
As well as anyone could know him, I guess. I mean, just okay. As a reporter. But, you know, I've been around him. I covered the World Championships in 2007 when he was the GM. I covered the Worlds in 2009 when he was the GM, the 2010 Olympics, 2014 Olympics. And being, I mean, we're not friends, but I certainly have a feel for, I guess, how he is with people and you know, have a tremendous amount of respect for how he's done his job transitioning from a player into management.
How ruthless do you think he is as a GM?
Well, I think he's not afraid to make a hard decision. Yeah. You know, let's remember how he handled the Jonathan Drouin situation. That was a third overall pick for the Lightning. Yeah. He was scratched a bit in their run to the 2015 final. Ended up, you know, being sent to the AHL and disappearing from the team. And there was a tremendous amount of pressure on him to make a deal there. And he made a pretty good deal when you're watching Mikhail Sergachev play in the Stanley Cup final. You know, I think to the Martin St. Louis situation, which, you know, was a tough one for him. He wasn't initially named to Team Canada in 2014 and was, you know, a player that was one of the best in the Lightning's franchise history. And he ended up making a pretty good deal when he had to trade St. Louis after the fallout of all that. And so, you know, the job requires you to, I think, and Berkey can certainly speak to this better than I can, to make hard decisions, to navigate a lot of this stuff in the public eye when the media is talking about it and everyone's speculating what's going to go on. And you know, it mustn't. He seems particularly adept at drowning out the noise and doing what he believes is right. And you know, time has shown, I think, time and again with those situations that he comes out on the good side of them way, way more often than not.
So here's why I'm trying to link all these things together with you.
I know, like, where are you leading me here? What's the
okay?
Next question?
So I'm just trying to put enough cheese in the trap here.
Offer sheet,
but not just offer sheet with Tampa, who's at the end of all of this is going to be a really vulnerable team. Because of their salary cap situation, as much as everyone's talking about Matthew Barzal and what's Lou going to do there, and is Barzal going to be a target, I look at Anthony Cirelli, and more specifically to the guy you just mentioned, Mikhail Sergachev, who he's very well acquainted with. And listen, Yzerman, after the Stahl deal, talked about, you know, weaponizing cap space and do whatever it is and pick up prospects and fill out the roster, redo this team. My first thought is, man, if Yzerman went after one of Tampa's players, that would be cold-blooded, but I could see it happening. Could you?
Well, he would be unafraid to do it. That much I know. I mean, That's not to, shouldn't be confused with he's definitely going to do it, because I don't know what his plans are, and I doubt he would share them with anyone at this point beyond his organization. But, you know, that's something that he would not think. There's no loyalties left there. I mean, I think he had a wonderful run in Tampa. You know, the team that would lift the Stanley Cup is only here because of the way he managed it for the years he was with that organization. But now it's pretty clear where his priorities lie. And you know, there's an opportunity. I think, you know, Tampa is probably the most vulnerable to one of these sheets. You know, the Islanders, you know, are also up against it, but maybe not to quite the same degree. And that's what's kind of crazy about the timing and all this. I mean, conceivably, we could be watching the Lightning win the Stanley Cup tonight or on Wednesday, and within a week's time, Julien Brisebois is going to have to, you know, make some trades to shed salary, I think, to you know, position himself best to not, you know, to be able to match one of those offer sheets if it comes in, or to make a team not even do it because he's found that cap space. So you know, that's a good storyline. You're on the ground floor on that one.
Just looking for, you know what, a little bit of chaos in hockey, CJ, as you all know. We're up against it. CJ, excellent as always. We'll see. I think I'm with you. Come on, Dallas, one more time. Don't let the season end just yet. Give us a couple of more games of hockey here. Thanks so much, as always, for stopping by.
No problem. And we're going to get 15 days of chaos. You watch.
I know. It's going to be banana sandwich. I think we're all ready for it. Thanks, CJ.
See you, bud.
There he is, Chris Johnson from the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, and Headlines. We're going to step away briefly. Stewie, guess who's up when we come back?
Chris Stewart.
Chris,
ding, ding,
I don't know how we got him. He's a tough get. I don't know if we had someone working for us on the inside, but Chris Stewart is going to be joining us here in a couple of moments, wrapping up a marvelous career. We'll see what's happening next with Stewie's brother as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and star of Battle of the Blades, Anthony Stewart. Stewie, we are pleased to welcome aboard someone who just wrapped up a wonderful NHL career that saw him battle through the NHL, have great successes, and battle his way back to the league. And now he wraps it up after a number of successful seasons. Please welcome to the broadcast, Chris Stewart. Chris, thanks so much for stopping by. And I'm sure you're getting this from all corners, and I'm sure you got it over text and DM and all over the place. But congratulations on really a wonderful, wonderful career.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, that means a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
How does it, you know, I've always wondered, you know, when a player decides to retire, and here, let me give you a couple of quick stories. I remember once talking to Kelly Rudy, and Kelly said, the minute you think about retirement, part of you already retires. I'm curious if you think that's true. And the other thing is, I remember talking to Trevor Linden once, and I said, when did it really sink in that you were retired, that when you had, you know, finally wrapped it up? And he said, it didn't really hit me until I was in the dentist chair, because there's no point in getting your teeth fixed while you're playing. And he said, as soon as the dentist started working on my teeth, I realized, wow, I'm really not going back now. Have you had any of those epiphanies yet, Chris?
I mean, through this pandemic, I think you're kind of forced to really, really sit down and think and self-reflect. So I think once this pandemic hit and kind of how I finished off my last season there in the American League, I think I knew inside that it was time. You know, I think it takes a little bit of more time to really sit down and, you know, really, really, really realize it. But, you know, I knew it was, you know, my time passing by.
We're going to turn the recreation over now to TV/radio/figure skating star Anthony Stewart. Go ahead, Stewart.
See, Stu, how's it going, buddy? How's it going, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, brother?
good. You know, when you were making your comeback and you got sent down to Lehigh Valley, you know, you said something to me that actually stuck with me. It made me like reconsider my whole way of thinking. You said, you know, it sucks, but I don't feel bad because I made the NHL twice. So talk about, you know, your journey back to the NHL, going from, you know, the British League, you know, and playing in the National Hockey League, getting a one-way contract with the $50,000 signing bonus, I'll add. Just talk about that journey.
Mm-hmm. No, it was, you know, it was extremely gratifying. You know, I think when we talked about retirement and when I did take that year off and go to the UK, you know, deep down inside, I knew I wasn't done. So the fire was still burning, and you know, I came back and had a great summer in the gym, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to still have a rapport with Chuck Fletcher, who just took over the Philadelphia Flyers. And, you know, I went in there and made the team and earned a spot and earned a contract. And, you know, for me, I think that was, you know, that was, I think that was more gratifying than, you know, playing my first NHL game and making it.
Berkey.
Hey, Chris, it's Berkey. Thank you very much for doing this. Congrats on your career, and more importantly, congrats on your new gig. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, for sure. That's kind of, you know, something that materialized during the pandemic and, you know, was put on the table for Chuck to join the team and player development. And, you know, I was excited to turn the page and start the new chapter and, you know, help these new young players, you know, reach their ultimate goal, and which is, you know, establishing a career in the NHL for a long time.
So with that position specifically with the Philadelphia Flyers, so what does your day-to-day look like? I mean, people hear about the title and working with players. What types of things do you do? It's got to be more than just on ice with the kids.
No, for sure. And I think, you know, the times we are now, you can do the Zoom calls, you can do the video, breakdown video. But I think for me, you know, I'm going to be a guy who's going to be leaned on, who, you know, just retired, so has a good grasp for the game and, you know, just kind of help these young players navigate through their young careers. You know, I don't think there's a position, me personally, that I haven't been in, from being a walk-on to the OHL at 15 to being a first round pick to, you know, being a guy who's relied on to contribute nightly to a guy who's been put on waivers. So, you know, I've kind of seen every grass and walk in the NHL, and, you know, I'm going to use my career and my experiences to help these guys get to the next level.
Stewie.
Okay, I'm going to ask this question before Berkey asks it. So you fought a lot of times. You know, I gave you that advice because I think that was my problem. I didn't fight enough. So who's the toughest guy that you actually fought, and how did that fight go?
You know, for me, I think probably was, you know, my first NHL fight and exhibition was against Kevin Westgaard, and it was in when Colorado and the Los Angeles Kings used to do the last exhibition game in Vegas. So, you know, first shift of the game, Kevin Westgaard and Scott Parker go toe-to-toe, and, you know, Westgaard ends up knocking out Scott Parker cold, and he leaves the game. So when Westgaard gets out of the box, I'm here going, you know, I'm going to make the team now, so I'm going to fight this guy. So I think the first uppercut he threw knocked my helmet about 15 feet in the air. So, you know, I survived, and, you know, that's when I knew I was ready for the big boys. But he was definitely one of the toughest guys I ever fought.
You know, that's a tough guy. You know, one of the things about working with Berkey is you get a real perspective on tough hockey players and sort of how they behave, and whether it's codes or whether it's technique, you tend to learn a lot. And one of the things that Berkey's always impressed on all of us here is there are backstories with a lot of fights in the NHL that people may not know about. Something that happened 2 years ago, all of a sudden, you know what? It's receipt time, and this is from something that happened way back. To that end... Can you, now that you're retired, can you tell the Zenon Konopka opening night, both guys taking a face-off story? Please, Chris Stewart.
Well, I think it dated back to a summer skate in Brampton where I think, you know, Knopper went after Ace Stew, and, you know, Ace Stew took his own advice and slipped on a banana peel and bailed out. So, you know, little brother had to come in there and kind of defend his honor, and, you know, and nothing ended up happening, and, you know, we're chirping back and forth, and he was like, I'll see you next year. And I'm like, oh, I'll see you next year. And then the schedule comes out, we're playing on the third game of the season. So I'm like, oh, here we go. I come like, we're in Nassau Coliseum, and I come out for warm-ups, and this guy's standing on the red line staring at us. I'm like, oh, here we go. And, you know, next thing you know, he's starting the game, I'm starting the game, and yeah, here we go, toe-to-toe. And, you know, it's funny how the story comes full circle. You know, 3-4 years later, we're playing in Buffalo, and we're teammates. So I walk into the gym, and we kind of just shared a chuckle. But, you know, I think I was a young guy coming up, and, you know, I had to earn my respect, and, you know, I backed it up on the ice, and, you know, he had the utmost respect for me after that.
That's such a great story. Berkey, you like that one?
Yeah, I do. I do. It's and I had Zenon Konopka, so I know how competitive he is. He played for me in Portland and a few games up in the show. So, Chris, there You've been involved in a couple of big deals. Like your trade to St. Louis was a big deal. Eric Johnson, a first round pick. What's that like being part of a big trade?
No, it was, you know, it was crazy. I think, you know, what happened was we're in San Jose on a one game road trip, and I think I got traded at 4 a.m. So, and I had nothing
it
with
was,
me. I think working,
yeah.
It was, I think I had a toothbrush, you know, we're literally going there and coming back. So, you know, it was a lot of expectations that followed that. And, you know, for the first overall pick, and, you know, kudos to Eric Johnson. He carved out a hell of a career. And, you know, at the time, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk was looked as a throw-in in that deal. And look at him now. You know, he's one game away from a Stanley Cup. So, you know, it goes to show you to, you know, three players who've really had a long career.
Yeah, let me just pause on that for one second, because that really was a unique trade as well, as Berkey mentions. And to your point, Chris, I can still recall my phone going off, getting the press release. I think it was like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, who's doing deals at 2 o'clock in the morning? So from a player's point, like, did you have any hint that this was coming, the deal with you and Shattenkirk for EJ?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we're a struggling team, and you know, I think we traded Craig Anderson earlier that day. So I figured if anything, you know, anything was going to happen closer to the deadline. I think we're 10 days before the deadline. So, you know, I think you really expect it more towards the deadline. But, you know, some GMs like to act early. So, you know, it happened. And, you know, I went to St. Louis, and, you know, I played there 3.5 years, and, you know, I had a great time there as well.
Stewie.
Well, we talked about this, I'm sure, off the air, but you know, there's so much emphasis on being elite and being the best player at 10, 11, 12 years old. So, you know, how was it for you growing up, you know, not being the quote unquote star, you know, right away, but just going through that natural development, being a little bit of a late bloomer?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I made the team as a 17-year-old walking onto the Kingston Frontenacs. And, you know, like I always said to everyone, I had the C game before I had the A game. So, you know, when I ended up getting drafted and sent it to the American League, and, you know, happened to work my way to the pro ranks, you know, I really already knew what to do playing as a fourth line, third line guy and junior making the team. So, you know, I've always kept that in my back pocket was, you know, yeah, I had my C game before the A game.
And, you know, your journey to hockey and through hockey has been a fascinating one. It was hockey, and then it wasn't, and then it was football, and then it was hockey again. What was it with you and were you always a football guy growing up too?
Well, yeah, you know, at the time I was bigger, and you know, if you know our family background, we were we were going through a little bit of financial hardship, and you know, to be honest, we didn't have the money. So, you know, for football, I just needed my cleats and my pads. It was a very cheaper option, and I was a bigger guy at the time. So, for me, it was an easy decision to, you know, to take that pressure off my family to try to support me through hockey. So, you know, I thought I'd try my way at football.
That's incredible. Berkey.
Yeah, so you should know, Chris, your big brother's very proud of you. He brags about you all the time, but he also takes credit for your tryout in junior. Is that a true story?
100%. You know, he walked in and, you know, he got me that tryout, but, you know, he also did get me the $2,500 school package. I don't know what I was going to do with that, but good thing I didn't end up eating it.
Tell us
cash,
that story.
It was cash too.
Tell us that story. Tell us
it was funny because, you know, Larry, you know, my brother Chris was going to go to Val-d'Or. I'm like, dude, you're not going to the Quebec League. Like, let me go to Mabby. Mabby's like, well, Stewie, your brother better be good or you're out of here too. So I was like, okay, Mab, don't worry, he can do it. So they asked him, like, can he fight? I'm like, well, we're going to figure that out. So I said, hey, if you want to make this team, you're going to have to fight. So I ended up fighting. And he made the most of his opportunity, but he actually got put in a scoring role when I went away to the World Juniors. So funny thing is, he went from like in the press box to fighting to finish the season with 18 goals. I think he scored like 15 goals in the last 40 games. So the funny part was Larry Mavity went to my dad after. He's like, you got any more sons?
That's a good story. Go ahead, Stewie. Stewie, go ahead.
So I just wanted to just ask about, you know, just the process. I want you to just to talk about, I want that message to these kids. I keep talking about these kids and, you know, we had a tournament this weekend and we end up losing, and I could just see it in this kid's face and the parents that, oh man, we're not really on track here. We're so behind. So what do these kids have to do at this age to have an opportunity to make the NHL?
I think, it's going to take hard work and dedication and sacrifice, but you know, at the end of the day, you got to work smart, you know, just because you go and spend a bunch of time on the ice working on your game, you know, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to correlate. So I think for that is just trusting the process. And, you know, I always see Berkey talk about it too, is, you know, be multi-sport athletes. You know, I think hockey now is a year round gig. You know, for me, it was, you know, like me and Anthony, we played hockey and we played soccer in the off season. So, you know, I think that's big too, is really just focusing on your development, but you know, you got to enjoy the process. You know, I was 15 when, you know, I walked on. No, I was 15 when I went to Ace Stu's, Ace Stu's NHL draft 2003, arguably the best draft of all time, you know, Nashville, Tennessee. And, you know, that's when I made that decision that this is the lifestyle I want. And, you know, I sacrificed everything to get there.
Your brother will say that's not arguably the best draft of all time. He will say it is definitely the best draft
facts.
Of all time.
F-A-X, facts.
Let me step back to that answer. The answer to a parent, because I get this a lot. Sure. The answer to a parent when says, what does my son have to do to play in the NHL? The right answer is, he's probably not going to.
So make sure he's a good Berkey. Come on, Berkey.
Make sure he's a good person. You have a better chance of going to Harvard Medical School than you do of playing in the NHL. So tell them to be a good person, be a good student. And then if this stuff happens, keep working. Put in all the time. Put in the time off the ice. But assume you're going to fail and have a backup plan. What is that? How does my son get to the NHL? If he's the 1% that make it, great. There's a right answer to that, which is assume he's going to fail, you idiot. You're screaming at your kid to do this or that. He's probably not going to play.
Hey, if you talk the numbers, yeah, that's definitely what to approach it. But you know, for me, I was, you know, I believe too, is I believed in the dream, and you know, the power of hope was definitely played a big reason why I got here. But you know, like you said, you know, if you want to use hockey to get an education and further your career and do have a backup plan, you know, there's nothing to shame in that. That's honest and that's honorable. And, you know, I think that's just as great as a tool.
Chris, as we wrap this thing up, and listen, I want to congratulate you again on behalf of all of us on just a wonderful career. I've gotten to know your brother real well, and we've talked plenty about you and your dad, your family, the legend of the lasagna trays at Christmas time, like all of it. We had some wonderful laughs. I want to know, Chris, from you, your thoughts on Anthony Stewart and Battle of the Blades.
Well, you know what? Everybody keeps asking me if I'm going to join the cast. I told them I've already done Battle of the Blades for 13 years, and I fought every wagon from Montreal to Battle Bay. So I think you're not going to catch me on there. But, you know, I see I think he's showing a little too much online. I think he's got to save some of the moves for the big performance.
Yeah, now he maintains he didn't know the cameras were on for that video that we've all seen by now. But Berkey and I are skeptical. Chris, wonderful career. This has been a delight. Best of luck in your new role with the Philadelphia Flyers and player development. And there's no way you can escape us now. You're officially part of the Hockey Central family, so we'll be bugging you full-time sooner than later. Thanks so much for this, and congratulations again on a wonderful career.
Perfect. Thanks for having me on, guys.
There he is.
See you, buddy.
Chris Stewart. Proud of your brother there, Stewie?
Absolutely. And I'm going to go against what Berkey says, because I had my sort of path to National Hockey League. And if you would have saw my brother at 15 and 16, and even Wayne Simmons at that age, you'd say there's no way they're making the National Hockey League. But we put them on a game plan. You're going to go train in L.A. You're going to stay here. Here's a little bit of pocket money. You're going to eat right, train right, and play right. They're going to make it. So I every one of my kids, I know it's probably not going to happen, but in my opinion, I train every day and give them all the time out of my day thinking that they're going to make it. So I know it's tough, but why not? Someone every year you need 700 players. Why can't you be that one player?
Wayne Simmons and your brother are elite athletes, for God's sake. You're talking about taking an elite athlete and refining his eating habits and training, and he makes it. The fact is, most players don't make it. It drives me nuts. These parents are psycho.
Berkey's trying to put me out of business here.
No, you know what? I'll put you out of business.
Put in the time, but have a backup plan.
No, that's true.
You know, they give every minor hockey team in Canada gives an MVP award. Why don't they give a student award, an academic award? Why aren't they encouraging that? Drives me nuts. Because I worked, Stewie. No one worked harder than I did. You talk to anyone I played with. You know why I didn't make it? Because I'm not a good enough athlete. But I had a fallback plan. So I'm saying, kids that are elite guys, go for it. But everyone else should have a backup plan.
What's the old saying? Use hockey. Don't let hockey use you. I couldn't agree with that more. And I will try to put you out of business, Stewie, this way. The tournament that the team you coach this weekend lost, the team that I coach this weekend, CAA Center in Brampton, ran the table, Stewie.
I saw the pictures. I saw the ringers. You had Rafi's son out there. I saw it.
No, we were thinking of having Torres on the bench. I don't know.
Young Scotty Bowman.
On there. I don't know about that. Perfect 1-0 in my tournament so far, Stewie. More Hockey Central here in a moment. Thanks to Chris Stewart for stopping by. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a flash. All right, about 60 seconds left in today's edition of Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Brian Burke. Burkey, we'll start with you on this one. It is game 6 tonight. It was dramatic. It was double overtime, as CJ mentioned at the top of the hour. It seemed as if Dallas was playing on fumes, but they got it done, forcing the game 6. Do we see the Stanley Cup this evening? Can you see Dallas pull out one more victory?
Yeah, I can see it, but my prediction would be, I believe that... that Dallas is going to extend this, and I think that if I were Tampa, I'd go back to 7D.
Stewie, have a thought on tonight's matchup?
Yeah, I think CJ was right. For some reason, I think this is going 7, and once it goes 7, anything could happen. But I think Dallas Stars, they got the momentum. I think they're going to ride into tonight as well.
They got Corey, they got Pavelski. They're scoring all the goals, and the goaltender looks hot again. 7:30 pregame show, Hockey Central with Ron McClain. Puck drops just after 8:00.